Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservative. It's been a while, I think, since we've had actually good, bad, and crazy martinis. But first of all, Jim, especially to you, but to all of our Irish participants in this podcast, happy St. Patrick's Day to you.
It is, and let's remember what being Irish is all about. Being drunk, yelling at people in the streets, vomiting, and all the other things that have a proud, proud tradition in the Irish-American community.
Well, the good news for Irish conservatives is they've been drinking all month long.
Yeah, I was going to say, this has been a good year for a really good year for drinking heavily so far, and it's a really lousy year to have given up drinking for Lent. I did not, but I know some people who did, and God's got to love those folks because, man, it's a heck of a sacrifice.
All right, well, on to the good martini now. And, of course, among the news we reported yesterday was that after the results of the Florida primary came in on Tuesday and Donald Trump was a decisive winner, Florida Senator Marco Rubio announced he was suspending his campaign. And less than a day later, credit to Rubio here, he was talking to a group of Minnesota supporters, explaining why he decided not to keep going, even though he could have had a chance perhaps at a contested convention and that sort of thing. But he said he didn't have a lot of money. And then he said that he hoped that Trump did not get the nomination. Red State's reporting on this says that Rubio did not endorse either Texas Senator Ted Cruz or Ohio Governor John Kasich, the other two remaining candidates. But Rubio praised Cruz, quote, as the only conservative left in the race. So, Jim, I think it'd be a little quick to assume that Rubio would endorse the very next day, but one of his top surrogates, Nikki Haley, has now endorsed Ted Cruz for the rest of the campaign. So while some of the healing might take a little more time, it looks like the coalescing has at least begun here.
It is. Now, look, I understand that if you're Marco Rubio and you're going through probably one of the most bitter disappointments of your life, it's got to be emotionally exhausting. It's got to be physically exhausting to dump so much of your time and effort into something and not have it pan out. And there's Ted Cruz, the guy who chose to campaign in Florida, knowing it was going to split the anti-Trump vote. The guy who said you were pro-amnesty the whole time. You know, it's understandable there might be some bad blood or there might be some resentment. It was nice to see Rubio praising Cruz. It was nice to see Cruz praising Rubio in his speech Tuesday night. I think it would be nice if everybody could speed up the healing process. We have contests next week, and we've got more coming down the pike. It seems pretty clear. Marco Rubio is like one step away from just formally announcing never Trump and that he would not vote for Trump as a Republican nominee. He's already said it's getting harder and harder. If that's the case, and you don't see a scenario for John Kasich, and I believe the math says, Greg, to win the nomination outright, John Kasich has to win 120% of the remaining delegates.
Something like that.
John Kasich is behind Marco Rubio for perspective on how hard it is for, you know. So the guy who's got a shot of winning this outright, not a good shot, but a slim shot, is Ted Cruz. Good for Nikki Haley. If you want to see somebody besides Donald Trump and you want to avoid the scenario of the brokered convention, which we'll return to in another martini, you got to get behind Cruz, and it's good to see this from Haley. And as much as it's, you know, I'm sure Marco Rubio and other folks don't want to hear it right now. Jeb Bush, I saw Romney campaigning for Kasich in Ohio. Look, there's one guy who's got a shot at beating Trump. And if you see Trump as a disaster, everybody's got to line up and salute. Like they say at the Washington Nationals games, Greg, run, Teddy, run.
No, that's exactly right. And even if nobody gets to the majority, coalescing around Cruz could obviously make the delegate count much, much closer and do a lot of damage to Trump's narrative that if he has this huge plurality that somehow he's inevitable. But we'll definitely get to that in a later martini today. On to the bad martini now, Jim. And part of this, the initial part of this story, is actually another good martini, because a few days ago, the House of Representatives passed a non-binding resolution. I believe it was 393-0 to declare that ISIS was guilty of genocide. And the narrative was that the Obama administration, and specifically the State Department, was about to let a deadline go by which it would declare that ISIS was committing genocide. But today, Secretary of State John Kerry had this to say.
In my judgment, Daesh is responsible for genocide against groups in areas under its control, including Yazidis, Christians, and Shia Muslims. Daesh is genocidal by self-proclamation, by ideology, and by actions in what it says, what it believes, and what it does.
All of that true, but the Associated Press has added more to this story. But Kerry's finding, it says, will not obligate the United States to take additional action against ISIS militants and does not prejudge any prosecution against its members, said the officials who spoke on condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to publicly preview Kerry's decision. So strong words, but not necessarily a lot of action in the works to back them up.
If I said that John Kerry's State Department was apathetic about ISIS, they would probably object very strongly. And it's kind of hard to tell what John Kerry's really upset voice is because that's the way he talks all the time. But I mean, this seems like it was a strange, like why would you hesitate to declare ISIS is committing, you know, religious genocide here? What's the counter argument? Well, they're killing everybody who disagrees with them. Okay. But that still counts as religious genocide, right? If you're trying to kill everybody in a different religious group, this is a religiously motivated to kill everybody who doesn't believe what you believe. What's the pro-ISIS argument? What's the argument of, whoa. We don't want to inflame tensions here. You know, it's just kind of, it seemed like a no-brainer. And so this almost seems like, if I don't say State Department incompetence or offices slow-walking things or things like that, it was just a baffling lack of responsiveness. And you think, you know, at a time when the country is so divided, at a time when the country feels so much like, you know, our government isn't doing anything right, it's not taking care of veterans, you know, the healthcare system's a disaster, the economy is not great. What, like, you know, wouldn't a clear unifying statement of we oppose the genocide of Christians be almost like the biggest, easiest slam dunk for the Obama administration ever?
You would think so.
Unless the idea is that, well, if we're really this upset about it, we have to do something about it. And the Obama administration doesn't see any good options and thus doesn't want to focus it. If he treats it like it's not that big a deal, the assumption is the American public will treat it as not that such a big a deal, regardless of whether or not it actually is a big deal. And I think most of us look at what's going on over there and say, yes, this is an extremely big deal. So, a molecular kudos to Kerry for acknowledging this. Now the big question is, what is our government going to do about it? And the suspicion is nothing in particular.
Yeah, that seems to be the pattern so far, unfortunately. All right, on to the crazy martini now and back to the political realm. It was yesterday that Ian and I were talking about the comments Trump made Wednesday morning that if he has not a majority of delegates, but somewhere close, he says about maybe 100 delegates short, and he had a clear lead over whoever's in second place, who at this point we have to assume would be Cruz, that if he's not basically handed the nomination, there would be riots. And quickly, the Republican National Committee sent out a statement saying, well, we're pretty sure he was speaking figuratively about that. And then Scotty Hughes, formerly of the Tea Party News Network, who is a big Trump supporter, was on CNN talking with Wolf Blitzer about this. And Wolf Blitzer asked her to clarify this, and I'm not sure a whole lot got clarified.
So, you know, riots aren't necessarily a bad thing if it means it's because it's sitting there and fighting the fact that our establishment Republican Party has gone corrupt and decided to ignore the voice of the people and ignore the process.
Scotty, you really don't want riots to emerge at the Republican convention in Chicago where people could be injured, people could be hurt, they could be maimed. You don't want riots.
It's not riot as in a negative thing, what we've seen in the past. It's the fact is you have a large amount of people that will be very unhappy. I don't think they would sit there and resort to, in fact, I know they would not resort to violence. I know they would not do it. However, they would make sure their voices are heard, that they can't be ignored.
They would be positive riots, Jim.
you beat me to the punchline there, Greg, because, you know, when I say riots, I don't mean a negative riot. I mean a positive, empowering, fulfilling riot. No, this doesn't make any sense. It does kind of prove the theory that you can get some talking heads to defend just about anything. And you almost get the feeling like Wolf Blitzer, like, you know, for a guy who generally sounds like he needs to breathe into a brown paper bag during any kind of breaking news.
You know. Yes.
We have breaking. Stay with us right now. We're gonna go straight to the situation. You know, here that's my Wolf Blitzer impression, by the way. But here is a case. Of, yeah, you know, there could be riots, but not negative riots. And, you know, why is it so hard? People say, I don't want to see any riots. Period. I don't want to see full riots. I don't want to see half riots. Diet riots. Mild riots. Quiet riots. For all the heavy metal fans out there. You know, like, this is not how we resolve things in this country, right? This is, you know, we have a system. There is a system of rules and laws for how the delegates get selected. If nobody gets 1237, it's then up to how those delegates shake out. Now, some of them, depending on their state rules and regulations of the state party, are committed to a certain candidate for a certain number of ballots. But the idea is that after enough ballots, if nobody wins, you end up with a circumstance in which it's up to those folks to come around and unify against somebody. My colleague Ramesh Panuru tossed out the idea of a runoff election between the two top finishers amongst the delegates. In almost likelihood, it would be Ted Cruz and Donald Trump. Put it before the delegates, see who goes. Probably a good chance for a Cruz victory in that circumstance, but you never know. And in a circumstance like that, no one would be able to argue that it was the election was stolen from them or something like that. But everybody's got to know the rules going in. I'd like the RNC to be a little clearer on this. I thought it was revealing the other day that one of the RNC spokesmen said that they were pretty sure that when Donald Trump talked about riots, he meant figuratively. Pretty sure. Pretty sure.
Yeah, so it's not exactly stealing anything if you haven't won the majority of the delegates. Now, there's been some rumors, of course, that there might be some rule changes if Trump gets to 1237, which I think would be unfair. Not that it would justify riots, but it would be unfair, and I think that should be protested.
The scenario that seems, you know, somewhat likely or plausible here is that, you know, you end up with nobody getting the 1237. Trump gets in with the most delegates and thinks he's got the best shot. Cruz comes in with the second, and Rubio, barring some giant surge for Kasich in these last states, Rubio ends up with the third most. In that scenario, you put, you know, the Rubio, you put together a Cruz-Rubio ticket, and Rubio delegates all throw their support to Cruz and put them together, and together they get more than 1237, and thus they get it. That would be a bitter pill to swallow for Donald Trump. It probably would be a lesson about working well with others. But that would be perfectly legal under the rules. Rubio can instruct his delegates to vote for somebody else. What it really comes down to, Greg, is that a lot of people believe that if they lost, there's no way they lost legitimately. That it all must be stolen. It all must be somebody else cheated. It's somebody else's fault. And it's a frustrating lack of maturity that begins with the candidate, but, you know, floats all the way down throughout the demographics. And, you know, maybe you'd see the same kind of circumstance all the way down. You know, you see the Ben Carson supporters who are totally convinced he would have won Iowa if it hadn't been for that rumor, allegedly, from the Ted Cruz campaign.
Right.
Even though he overperformed his final polls.
Yes. People will believe anything, especially this election cycle. As you have said before, we are hiring a contractor. We are not hiring a messiah or anything else that people somehow seem to ascribe to these candidates over and over again. Yet when you watch the unadulterated devotion to these people on social media and elsewhere, in some ways it's admirable and in some ways it's really frightening.
You know, we're watching, you know, in Living Color's Cult of Personality song has never been more appropriate, Greg.
Jim, on that note, very good. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.